The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, all the drama of those midweek cup shocks. At Old Trafford, the worst shootout since Bugsy Malone sees Sunderland through to face old friends Man City, while David Moyes, like the Prince in Rapunzel, gets let down by De Gea. He now has a mountain to climb in the league, and indeed he's got the Matterhorn. There's news from Europe, where big names have been a-tumbling too. Milan, PSG and Falcao, after his knee-knack in the French Cup. And we take a look forward to this weekend's FA Cup fourth round matches. Phil Brown v Hull, Arsenal against Coventry, yes please. All of that and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey everybody, it's Paul McInnes.
Hi James.
Why are you making an ironic face like that, Paul?
No, it was not really ironic, I am enthusiastic.
All right.
I'm just slightly anxious.
Why wouldn't you be enthusiastic and anxious with big themes and big important topics to be discussed? There's a responsibility.
Yeah, I suppose that's what David Moyes does, isn't it? He's both excited and anxious at the same time.
Yeah, but he is. Hey, John Ashdown.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks. Good. Nice to see you.
Nice to be here. Good to get the chance to keep that FA Cup flame alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much so. And Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Right. Sporty in your not wearing your headphones-ness.
Don't need them.
Everyone else has got headphones
on.
Paul doesn't. He flies commando. Yeah, super stuff. Right. Anyway, Man United Sunderland, a remarkable game.
It was rich in symbolism, wasn't it?
The
way that United went out, failing the most basic test of competence possible, the shootout, knocked out by a team which three quarters of their back four comprised of players who three or four years ago were deemed not good enough for United. Mm. So it kind of shows where United are at. At the moment, they're a team without the tools that befit their ambitions.
Yeah, David Moyes came in saying it was his intention to give the fans something to shout about, and I guess in that sense he succeeded.
He looked really sort of cadaverous, didn't he, after in his post-match kind of media duties. And there's no surprise, I mean, you would do, I suppose, having sat through 120 minutes of that, because although it was exciting towards the end, I mean, United were really, really average.
Sunderland weren't great either.
No, but that's the thing, they looked like a sort of mid-table, well, I suppose that's what it was in a way, it's like a mid-table clash between two fairly average sides. If you want to kind of make a few excuses, there's that weird away goals rule that would have ended it on 90 minutes for most teams. Mm. But yeah, it was pretty dire. Although, can I make a mitigating also about the shootout, which everybody's been saying is the worst shootout of all time, and
or
all the
in
rest
many ways
of it.
The best, but yes.
Well, exactly. It is a new kind of trend, isn't it, in penalty shootouts and in penalty taking in general, that you aim high. So once upon a time, you drilled penalties low and towards the bottom corners. That was how you took a penalty. Mm. These days, you try and roof it. And so, although it looks awful when they're being blazed over the bar, they were at least trying to do things the modern way.
Yeah. I liked United, they had two low penalties saved as well.
Yeah. So that's true, yeah. Mm.
I liked the penalties by Stephen Fletcher and Adam Johnson because they made no effort whatsoever to disguise where they were going to hit it. I thought that was some kind of double bluff.
Right.
That utterly failed.
Right, well, terrific stuff anyway for Sunderland, very much the heroes. Is there a case actually for suggesting that all mid-table clashes from now on should be settled in the case of a draw by a penalty shootout?
We wouldn't have any points at Carrow Road if that wasn't the case.
Oh, right.
But it's not a mid-table though. I mean, they are still in the bottom three, Sunderland. I mean, they're a struggling side, and they did struggle to create chances. I just think if you're Moyes, you're just like I just ask you to do one basic thing. It's like this team, I'm not asking you to go out there and beat Bayern Munich or beat Barcelona, but just affect a proper result at home, preferably in the 90 minutes against one of the league's bottom sides, and they didn't. I mean, I can sympathise with his frustration.
Mm. What about those black cats? Because surely, if anyone could beat City at Sunderland, City indeed, in the last eight meetings, Paul, have only beaten Sunderland twice.
Yeah, a bit of a black cats are unlucky for City. I thought Sunderland did play well last night, right up until the final third, whereas they just couldn't create it. Other than that, they did play well. I didn't understand the substitution of bringing on Altidore rather than Jaccherini, who I thought would have provided some bit of subtlety around the box there. But if they can get a striker in over this January, then they could move up the table otherwise.
Although Bardsley's, that first shot, I think it was on target in the 199th minute or whatever it was, that was a powerful effort. You can understand how De Gea bravely did try to stop it going in, but there's nothing he could do.
Couldn't keep it.
Two goalies couldn't have kept that one out.
Well, no, it was doing what De Gea did, which was not get your hands behind it properly.
Yeah.
I mean, Sunderland, you know, since Poirier's come in, there's been an upturn. And if you sort of discount that horrific first half against Southampton at the weekend, was that this last weekend?
Yeah.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, they were a shambles in that first half, but since then it's been okay.
And also the quality again, which they actually showed in that Southampton match, is the persistence. They don't give up and they keep fighting, and that is one kind of probably a primary quality you want in a bottom half side.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about their chances against Man City at Wembley. Remember, Wigan beat City at Wembley last year, didn't they?
That's right, and Sunderland won at the Stadium of Light this season.
Yeah,
I still think if you were a betting man, if you were a non-betting man, if you just wanted to have something to say in the pub, you would probably still bet Manchester City to win that game, wouldn't you? I think you would.
Yeah, all right then. Sunderland bringing 9,000 fans to Old Trafford.
Yeah, and they get, what is it, 31,000 allocation in the final. So it should be noisy.
A raucous atmosphere. Right, well, Man United possibly having some better news with the arrival of Juan Mata, which is the other big United story this week.
It's another thing that just makes it so disappointing. You know, just when they're on the verge of kind of changing the narrative slightly, and they go out and give a performance like that. But yeah, Mata, 34 million accepted by Chelsea this morning. United aren't commenting on it for some reason, but you would expect that move to go through.
All right. Well, a couple of questions from listeners. Toon says, is Jose pulling another masterstroke by selling Mata to Man United to help them beat his rivals for the title? Because Chelsea have already played Man United twice. And secondly, Sammy F. Silver, how would the pod incorporate him into the United lineup? This is the parlor game that's sweeping the nation at the moment, isn't it? Where do you put Mata in your Man United lineup?
Well, you put him in as the number 10, but if you're paying £34 million, he's got to be your primary number 10. Now, what we've seen this season has been Rooney excelling in that role, and that he seemed to have got his hunger back playing in that position. Now, obviously, you could play Rooney up top, but if you play Rooney up top, then you're not playing Van Persie, and you can't really imagine a system where they play Mata behind the two. And then there's Kagawa, who is probably, I would say, the signs would be not one for the long term at United. But the rumours are that Rooney will be off in the summer as well.
There's also Moyes' other signing, Fellaini. Where does he fit in?
Rummage, just good chap.
Fits in that too, doesn't he? I mean, I know it's...
Which two?
It fits in the two behind alongside Fletcher or Carrick.
I think, presumably, when everybody's fit, you end up with a front four of Rooney, Van Persie, Januzaj and Mata. And Kagawa and Welbeck don't really get much of a look in.
Right. They're the reserves.
And that means playing Rooney out wide.
Well, I think there could be a fairly fluid three.
And the counter to that is Man United don't have the defensive midfielders that are able to provide enough work to cover those front four. Now that they've splurged, they've smashed their piggy bank and emptied its contents in Chelsea's direction, will there be anything left over for anyone else?
I assume that, well, there's got to be. I mean, it's not a problem that one person can fix, that one player can fix, I don't think. If they bring in Mata and they do hold on to Rooney, although, as Paul says, the signs are that he may well leave in the summer, then that sort of, I mean, that first choice front four that I mentioned is pretty useful. The rest is something to be worked on, I guess.
In terms of Mourinho's reasoning for selling him, I think it's simply because that's the best offer they're going to get. No, nobody else is going to pay £34 million for a player who Mourinho doesn't particularly want.
One of the reasons Mourinho doesn't particularly want him is because he doesn't show enough discipline within the team shape, which, again...
Says Jose, yeah.
But I think you're inclined to trust him on these matters, really. I mean, if you look at the way the team are performing without him in the side now, which I think might have knock-on effects for United as well, if we're talking about this midfield too, not being strong enough in the first place.
Yeah, but I don't think he's some kind of virus you can insert into Man United's smoothly running programme that's going to disrupt everything. Mata was a brilliantly effective player for Chelsea. They just might have found someone who's more ideally suited to what Mourinho wants. I think he's not necessarily a tactically...
It's his mobility, his relative lack of mobility, I think, that Mourinho dislikes most. He's just simply not quite as fast and powerful as Mourinho's model players.
And there's talk certainly in one of the papers today that it's all part of a master plan to make space in the squad for bringing Ross Barkley in the summer.
Ooh, that's exciting. Anyway, sticking Mata wherever you stick him in the Man United lineup, is that going to turn things around for them? Because they're now out of this cup as well, and a long, what, 6 points off the top four?
He certainly adds a bit of ingenuity that they lack up front, but as John said a moment ago, it requires much more than just one player to sort out their problems.
Although, remember back at the start of the season when Arsenal went and spent loads of money on a player that a lot of people said, I'm not sure if they really need, haven't they got people like that, where's he going to fit in? Mesut Ozil, who, while not being completely brilliant since that day, has, by popular consent, largely lifted the team to the point at which they're... Just by virtue of being a great player.
Arsenal have a better squad than United. They also brought in Flamini, who made a big difference, which is the sort of player that United could do with. And Arsenal's back four is much better than United's.
Can Fellaini be their Flamini?
I think Fellaini is better further forward. I think because of his size, people tend to think he'd be the ideal midfield enforcer. But I think he's actually better almost playing just behind a striker, which is also Mata's best position, although they're totally different players. They do their best work in similar positions.
And I think one thing that in the psychological arena, which is one we all like to frolic in now and again, you would think that squad, limited, did win the title last season. So there is a mind trick that can be pulled to turn that team into an effective, fighting, winning unit. And maybe the big signing could do that.
Right. Okay.
You sound sceptical.
I don't know. I don't know if Moyes, the human handbrake, can perform that.
But what counts as a turnaround for Man United at this point? I mean, they're not going to reach the top four.
Why not? It's only 6 points.
I mean, they're too far. They're too far gone.
It's gone, is it?
I think so, personally.
They're not good enough, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think the team's good enough to overhaul them. Particularly with Rooney. I mean, if Rooney and Van Persie were fit and available, that changes things, but
right.
They're not.
Is that science fiction to imagine them coming back quite soon and playing some games for Man United?
At some point they'll come back, but I still think they won't reach the top four. So what's a turnaround? Is it finishing fifth? Is that okay? I don't
know. It's patently the turnaround is the aim for the top four. I mean, I think it's eminently doable.
All right. Paul?
I think it's possible, but I don't think they'll do it.
Okay. Hey, and apparently Chelsea are going to spend some of that large bag of cash on that Mohamed Salah fellow that Liverpool thought they were going to sign, but have been... What have they been doing? They've been dithering about this? Well, why
I was reading in the Daily Express this very day that Liverpool...
Can I have it after you're done?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, great.
I mean, I'll keep some of the interesting bits, which will be absolutely nothing, and I'll give you the rest.
Great.
But Liverpool had agreed a £10 million fee for him. So.
Right, but now Chelsea have come in with a bigger fee. Much, much bigger.
Much, much bigger. How much, much, much bigger?
£15 million.
15? Yeah. 50% bigger for all you maths heads.
I like Chelsea's new approach to signings. They let other teams do all the scouting and then just come in and gazump them. Although, having said that, Chelsea would be well aware of how good Salah is because he ripped them apart twice.
That's also very true.
I did the rumour mill this morning, so I'm all over the tittle-tattle in the tabloids. There was also talk about Andreas Griezmann from Real Sociedad and Freddy Guarín from Inter.
Well, the Guarín stuff's quite old, and there's a great backstory on all of that as well, because Inter have been trying to offload him to pretty much anybody. They probably tried to get hold of you, John. I know they rang me a couple of times. And they thought they'd had the deal sorted with Juventus, but the fans rebelled because they didn't want their player, even though they don't like him very much and have been booing him. They don't want him going to arch-rivals Juventus. So they basically had massive demonstrations outside the club offices. They surrounded honorary president Massimo Moratti's car, and there was much consternation. And then, having agreed the deal, Inter backed out. And now Juve say, we're never going to deal with you again unless you publicly apologise. Anyway, producer Ben keeps gesticulating wildly because he's had enough, frankly, of all of this chat. He doesn't even want me to mention the fact that Man City have now bought another club or are buying another club. Did you see this? They've got New York City in New York, and they've just bought an A-League franchise.
In Australia?
Very much so. Melbourne Heart. They've also registered the domain name Melbourne City. So the suggestion is that...
You can see a brand identity there, can't you? The word city.
It's interesting that. So you're going to have Man City and then New York City and Melbourne City. What's next?
Hull City.
Hull City, yeah.
Once they become Hull Tigers, Man City will buy them and turn them back into a city.
Right, there you go, Hull fans.
A heartwarming story that would be.
Yeah, brilliant. All right then, producer Ben, here's your bit of music and we'll be up with part two after that. Part two starts with the magic of the car and the fourth round draw, which everyone said was a poor fourth round draw. But I'm looking through this. There's delights almost everywhere. Which games caught your attention, Paul McInnes?
Yeah, I was looking through, and I really thought that Southend versus Hull.
Yes,
looks like something of a cracker there.
Wow, what an extraordinary story that's going to be.
It is. I mean,
tell us why that caught your interest.
Because I've once been to Southend, and yes, it's a very nice place. And if Roots the weather's Hall. Okay, then you can have a nice day out, and it's reasonably cheap to eat. And probably there'll be some kind of bonding with the Hull lot because they're all coastal. I just can't think of a good read. Oh, Phil Brown.
Come
yeah,
on.
Phil Brown's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil Brown, former manager of Hull, now in charge of Southend.
Still and doing great things with
doing them. Great things and sounding more like, you know, a sage with every passing week. And yep. He'll be able to put that to the test. 3 o'clock on Saturday, a traditional kickoff.
Yeah, that's nice. Super. All right. John, have you got an FA Cup fixture you want to tell us about?
What about Arsenal Coventry on
yes.
Friday evening?
Yeah, and another traditional kickoff.
Yeah, another traditional kickoff time. Yeah, it could be interesting. Coventry this week have been training with their first 11 playing against 12 players in their training sessions in order to get them used to the work rate required against a team that keeps possession like
Arsenal. That's a brilliant
like
idea.
Arsenal. Yeah. And there's also going to be a protest at in the away end.
Oh, yeah.
On 35 minutes, the Coventry fans are going to be holding up signs saying why. Because they're playing 35 miles away in Northampton.
Ah,
and
right.
On 61 minutes, they're going to be holding up signs saying when. Because Jimmy Hill took over in 1961. That's the reason behind that one.
Okay.
So we're going to see why and when. And it's all about their stadium problems.
Yeah, absolutely. This is almost a home game for them compared to where they normally yeah. turn out.
Well, it's not that much further away, I suppose.
It was 6-1 last time they went to the Emirates. That was in the Capital One Cup. Similar scoreline, do you think, John, this time around?
Potentially. I mean, Coventry have just come off the boat. They had a great start to the season. They had that 10-point penalty that they came into the campaign with. Had a fantastic start. Wiped it out within the space of 4 or 5 games. Had a brilliant autumn. Looked like they were just going to tear through the division, really. And, you know, the playoffs were a possibility. They've just come off the boil a little bit,
right?
With a few draws. I think they've only lost once since November, still, but there's been a few draws sort of thrown in.
Right, they're unbeaten in 5. The second highest scorers in League One.
Yeah, I mean, Callum Wilson, Leon Clark banging them in. Leon Clark scoring goals rather than falling out with people for once in his career, which he's always sort of threatened to do. I mean, he's kind of got the physical attributes and to be a decent goal scorer. A lot of pace. He's a big guy, but has had attitude problems, particularly at Swindon when he fell out with Paolo Di Canio, most
imagine that.
Notably. And behind them, they've got John Fleck, who was kind of a one-time next big thing at Glasgow Rangers.
Really?
It's not Glasgow Rangers, it's just Rangers.
Just Rangers.
Yeah.
But we know who you're talking about, John. You're just being thorough. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Have you got a list of fixtures, haven't you? Have you doodled around one of them in particular?
I got a list. Yeah, it's the one that was done before all the replays were completed, so I can't remember who won the replays. And so, but I do know that Rochdale are hosting Sheffield Wednesday.
Are they?
Yeah, and that should be an interesting game because Rochdale are pretty formidable at home and they play a really nice, tidy and intricate brand of football.
Do they?
Disposed of Leeds quite comprehensively in the last round. So it'll be interesting to see if they can give Wednesday similar treatment. And Wednesday, of course, are in good form under Stuart Gray, who still has not been made manager on a permanent basis, as far as I know. Is that right? Maybe that's the new way of keeping managers on their toes. Tim Sherwood suggested only last week that him being given a short-term contract actually reduces the amount of pressure he's under. Because if he'd been given a 5-year contract, the Spurs fans would think, oh, God, we're stuck with this guy.
Right.
And they'd be more critical of him. Whereas if everyone thinks that he's only keeping the seat warm and they're going to be rid of him soon, then it gives him a bit of comfort.
That's such late capitalist ideology. That stick everybody on 0 hours contracts and see me. The fear will make them thrive.
Well, look who run the clubs.
Yeah, well, indeed. Capitalists, mate, all of them. I wonder if Wigan and Palace might also be a half-decent game with some...
Well done for mentioning that.
Both teams in reasonable form as well.
Yeah, and of course, Wigan are the holders, aren't they?
They are indeed.
Yeah, and Palace, of course... That'll be cracking, that game.
Yeah, I think that should be. You know, Wigan they've had a kind of. They went on a great start under Roslem. It's like bubbles, but he seems to be getting the best out of some of the Premier experienced players.
Right.
As is Pulis.
Right. Bolton Cardiff. Bolton are 18th in the Championship. Ooh, they're in all sorts of trouble, aren't they? 2 wins in 10. They just lost 7-1 to Reading. Yeah. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny at all.
No, it was a shambles of a game, that.
Right. And Doogie Freeman's under all sorts of pressure. Club has £163.8 million worth of debt.
But that debt is owed to the owner, who's not charging interest on it.
Oh, he's not, unlike benefactors like Vincent Tan and Asad Alam.
Yeah, so it's not as urgent as all of that, but still pretty horrible.
Still, not the best, hey? Birmingham Swansea, another fourth-round tie news. They're only a place above Bolton in the Championship. And Swansea aren't in the best of form either, but they do like a cup, of course.
They did beat Swansea in the Capital One Cup earlier on, 3-1.
Birmingham
this season, yeah.
Did they?
Although Swansea made 10 changes for that game, so it'll sort of depend on Laudrup's lineup, I guess.
Yeah, what will Laudrup's thinking be? Will he try and rest players because of the way that they're falling towards the bottom three?
I don't know if he can afford to, really, because, you know, they are tumbling towards a certain, you know, tumbling towards trouble, and then, you know, you go out and lose this sort of game. It just adds to it, doesn't it?
Did you see that extraordinary story that, was it Gary Monk? And Chico Flores, and the club suggested that this was just some spectator who got the wrong end of the stick and rang the police, and the police said there's nothing. But the fact is that the police were called to Swansea's training ground because there'd been a bust-up between players, in which, allegedly, a brick was involved.
Yeah, it was all just a big misunderstanding. Waving a brick at somebody in Spain means something entirely different to what it means here.
Right.
Some of the writing around that was suggesting that this is really scared Hugh Jenkins and the hierarchy, and the feel that Laudrup is losing the dressing room, that the people aren't happy with training and all this sort of stuff. I just wonder if anybody's heard anything about that, because if going from a messiah to a naughty boy can be a very dodgy
trajectory. When he first arrived, the first 2 or 3 weeks that he was there at Swansea, there were a lot of stories about how the team were desperately unhappy with his training, and then that all just vanished because they kept winning games, so there was no market for that kind of
spin. Seems quite symbolic that, you know, one of his Premier League signings is facing up against one of the League One boys.
We haven't mentioned Forrest Preston.
Yep, Billy Davies against one of his old teams. Forrest,
now managed by Simon Grayson.
Yeah, who's rebuilding his reputation somewhat down there. We won't be reporting on that because we're still banned from going to Nottingham Forest.
Oh, of course.
So we should probably just blank. Can you bleep out the word whenever we mention?
Because I was going to talk about Leeds as well, and that's a similarly sensitive area, isn't it? Or have we been allowed back in now?
I think we're okay with Leeds now.
Is it since Ken Bates has
gone?
Right, okay. And Bournemouth against Liverpool. Now, they've met them twice before in the FA Cup, and I hardly need to tell you, Paul Doyle, both times they took Liverpool to a replay, which both times finished 4-1 at Anfield. But still...
And Bournemouth have one of the Championship's hot strikers in Lewis Grabban at the moment.
Yeah.
What else they got? Oh, that Russian owner, Denim, who got his wife to do a team talk once.
Double Denim.
Very much so, yeah. And they got Richard Hughes, top pundit Richard Hughes. I'll fly through the rest of these, shall I? Because I feel that the attention is wandering a bit. There's Man City against Watford. Is this going to be one of those City kind of hitting double figures type games? Or under Beppe Sanino, can Watford, you know?
They play a sort of fullback thing down at Watford, which will be
a fullback thing.
Well, not a fullback, a wingback thing is what I mean. What I'm trying to say,
a continental 5-3-2 formation.
Yeah,
right.
Which will be interesting to see how that works against. I imagine it'll be more like a 5 at the back than a 5 string across midfield.
Because if there's an area that you want to, I was going to say, if there's an area you want to attack with City, it would be the likes of Demichelis, arguably, and Zabaleta, who everyone loves. But they're not looked as strong on the wings, have they, at the back?
What, City?
Yeah.
They've looked strong all over. Well, I mean, it's hard to see it.
I think they have looked strong. Kolarov has been one of their form players of late. I mean, Dimichelis in the centre.
Okay.
It's worth, listeners should look out Simon Burton's interview with the Watford manager, Beppe Sanino, on the Guardian website. It's a fascinating insight into his life when he was a lower league player in Serie. I don't think he got above Serie
Chi.
Went as a player. And when he retired, did part-time coaching and worked in a hospital as a janitor cleaning toilets for 10 years. Eventually got his big break and, you know, worked his way through. I think he then eventually got to manage in Syria. Mm. It's a really good interview, actually. You should check it out.
Nice one. Sunderland taking on Kidderminster. So, of course, Sunderland, which cup are they going to go for?
All of them.
All of them.
Go for the quadruple.
Brilliant. Southampton taking on Yeovil.
Yeovil haven't been to the fifth round. They're not there yet. If they beat Southampton...
Yeah.
I might not get the chance to say this at any other time.
So, yeah.
But they've not been to the fifth round since 1948-49.
Yes.
in which they lost to Manchester United 8-0 at Main Road.
Wow.
One of the few teams, a claim to fame, not many teams have lost to Man United at Main Road.
No, that's...
It not being their ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Stevenage. Stevenage, they've got a good cup history against Premier League sides, and they're taking on Everton. Now, of course, Martinez with Wigan last year made
went all the way, didn't he?
He did, didn't he?
Everton are just slowing down in their form a little bit.
Mm.
And one of the knock-ons of the Radamel Falcao injury, which he might be coming back to later.
Right, let's talk about it now. You're going to say about Lassina Traore.
Yeah, so that there is a fear that maybe that deal, which I think there's a work permit being granted, might not go through in the window because Monaco need that striking cover.
Mm.
And having sold Jelovic and with Lukaku kind of out of form. Mm.
Out of form, is he?
Yeah, he has been out of form. He certainly hasn't been scoring a lot of goals, and there's a couple of Everton fans I was talking to feel like, you know, it's his reputation that's going before him now rather than anything he's actually doing at the minute. Obviously, he's still only 19, 20. But yeah, Everton needs striking options.
Right. Sheffield United, your lot, John.
Yeah.
Hosting Fulham. Do you fancy your chances there?
I think we do, yeah. When Norwich or Fulham came out of the hat, I think most United fans thought that was a pretty good draw. We're not in great form. We're still in the relegation zone in League One. Mm. Season's kind of sort of was supposed to have a massive turnaround when Nigel Clough came in. It's not really happened. But we showed against Villa. We've got the sort of team...
You beat Villa?
Beat Villa at Villa Park. Mm. And the sort of team that if you give them space to play in, which most League One teams don't do because it's all kind of, you know, full on, we're not a bad sort of footballing team. We're very, very lightweight, but we're not a bad footballing team. So if Fulham sort of back off and don't play with the right intensity, then
right.
There's a chance.
Right, and they're away from home, Fulham.
Yeah,
and they're rubbish away from home.
Yeah, it's at Bramall Lane. Yeah.
Huh. Cool.
I should think with Parker and Sidwell in midfield, if they play, they should be okay, but you never know.
You don't, do you? What about Chelsea Stoke, all Premier League clash ahoy at Stamford Bridge, and Moo loves winning cups in his first season, doesn't he? He does.
He loves winning football matches.
He just, yeah, especially at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Hmm.
He can just, like City, they're just on a slightly different level where they could rotate the entire 11 and it would still be incredibly strong.
Right. So as we were saying, actually a fascinating and varied fourth round draw there. Is there one fixture you'd like to pull out as a potential upset, Paul?
I really did look and I couldn't see any. I would go for Stevenage Everton if I had
really?
To pull one, yeah.
Yeah? Just on the basis that it sounds nice, or
no? That's Stevenage, you know, are always a combative side. They always get in your face, and they will make things difficult for Everton. And if they aren't up for it, and if players are rested, maybe,
just maybe. John, Sheffield United,
an upset. Yeah, I think that's as good a chance as any. I think looking at the fixture list, Stevenage, they did run Everton close in the Capital One Cup as well, took them to extra time.
Ooh.
So yeah, Stevenage and Sheffield United are the two. Yeah, get on.
Right. Paul?
Rochdale.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. Magnificent stuff. Challenge now is to make part three as exciting and vibrant as that FA Cup roundup in part two, but we'll see what we can do after this.
If you're looking to get in shape, build your fitness and improve your well-being, then all you need is a decent pair of running shoes, a bit of determination, and the brand new Guardian Guide to Running podcasts. Our 8-week programme will transform you from complete running novice to someone who's able to run for 30 minutes non-stop. And if you're a more experienced runner and want to take things to the next level, then we've also got 4 special runs for you in our advanced running guides. The Guardian Guide to Running podcasts, available now on iTunes and theguardian.com.
Part 3 begins with our friend Sid Lowe in Spain. Where, Sid? Where in Spain?
I am down on the East Coast, Jim, but I'm currently, bizarrely enough, watching CSK Moscow in a training game.
Sid, you've missed the news.
I know, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I just heard about it. Yeah, that Sandro Rosé is on his way.
Top man at Barcelona, who has just resigned over the Neymar affair. Can you just briefly sum up what the Neymar affair is?
Yeah, the Neymar affair, in very simple terms, is that Barcelona said that Neymar cost €57.1 million, of which €40 million got paid to NNN, which is Neymar's father's company, and €17.1 million got paid to Santos. Now, quite apart from the question mark of €40 million to Neymar's dad's company because there was third-party ownership and so on and so forth. That's complex in itself, but there's been accusations that, some of the other money that was paid or theoretically paid for Neymar has been hidden as other factors. So, for example, friendlies with Santos, an extra payment to Neymar's dad as a kind of talent scouter in Latin America, and a series of hidden payments, basically, that theoretically are not a payment on free on as an option on free Santos players, but theoretically, of course, have been packaged as something not to do with Neymar. But it's been accused by a Barcelona member that this is to do with Neymar, and he's taken to this the court. The court has now admitted the complaint, if you like. In other words, yes, we will investigate it. We will ask a public prosecutor to look into this.
Yeah, so he's now being investigated for misappropriation of funds, and the suggestion is that the actual figure that Neymar costs is closer to 140 million euros.
Well, the figure that was put out by the newspaper El Mundo midweek, I think, was 95 million euros. Now, I, to be honest, looking at it, I can see that the figures can be interpreted in different ways, and it seems to me that while it may well be intimately linked to the signing of Neymar, then of course Barcelona probably could justify, the friendlies are not about Neymar, and the option on three players is not about Neymar. Those are separate payments. But I suppose the question mark that's raised by this, and so the public prosecutor made a report in which they talked about simulated contracts and definitions of fees not being for what they were defining them to be. Now, I suppose the question mark becomes, first of all, where has the money gone and what it was paid for? And then I suppose the next question becomes, why was this money defined as something else? Who were they trying to keep it away from, or who were they trying to disguise it from, if indeed that's what they were trying to do?
Right. Well, it's sufficiently grave enough for Rosell to resign. Where does this leave Barcelona?
Well, it leaves Barcelona with the vice president in charge for the time being, and there will then be elections in the summer. This is a theory, at least. Elections in the summer with Carlos Villarubi, who's the vice president, presenting himself as a continuity candidate. Now, of course, where I think this really leaves Barcelona in the medium to long term is, I think it leaves Barcelona with Joan Laporta coming back as president.
Wow,
I think he would almost certainly, I think he must be absolutely delighted by this. He will almost certainly stand in the summer, and to be honest with you, I think he would win.
All right. Civil war at the Catalan club?
Well, Barcelona is a club that has a tendency to self-destruction anyway, that has a tendency to the way the Spanish tend to define it, to ismos. You know, everything's an ismo. Either you're a follower of Guardiolismo or a follower of Nunismo, for example, back in the day, or Cruyffismo. And so it does have a tendency to create division anyway. This, of course, will I think, exacerbate that. Although, of course, in the long run, it might be better, because if a different president came in and did feel like he had the support of fans and most members of the club, then things could be settled for a while. But, of course, Laporta went when at the end of his reign, having previously survived a vote of no confidence. So there's no guarantee that these kind of problems will end.
All right. Do you see this impacting on the team at all at this delicate point in the season?
Difficult to know the answer to that. I mean, I suppose potentially it could indeed. Yeah, I mean, I don't know to what extent the players will feel disappointed by this. Some may even feel a little relieved. Some may feel under more pressure, and they'll certainly feel like this is a talking point that they didn't want it to be. But then I suppose at least it's a talking point which directly at least affects on someone else, not directly on them. But yeah, of course there's a possibility for this to affect the team. Of course there is.
Posts and tweets. Here's Nick Corey, for example, who writes in, "So, just how mental is Chilino? Should Leeds fans be worried?" This is Massimo Chilino, owner of Cagliari, who's apparently on the verge of buying Leeds, although deal's still not yet confirmed, they say. Are you familiar with Massimo Chilino and his works?
No, not at all. If only we had an Italian football expert in the house.
Yeah, well, we don't really. But, I mean, I know he's one of those crazy figures in the world of Italian football owners. One of those guys who goes through three or four managers a season, usually. It goes in and out of prison a fair bit as well. He was in prison last season.
For what?
Well, it's a funny thing. The main thing that Chilino's done of late is continually move his team around. He got into a dispute with the local council who own the Sant'Elia Stadium where they play at in Cagliari. And because the place is falling down, and he's probably got a point. The legal intricacies are a little bit beyond me. But anyway, he basically decided, well, I'm not going to play here. I'm going to play down the road a little bit outside of town. And he built himself this kind of vague rickety Meccano structure there, which he said is a stadium, and got the local mayor to say, yes, that's fine. But the health and safety people said, no, this is not. So after they had games there a couple of times, basically the police came along and shut it down. So Cagliari went on the road, and they had to find other places to play their home games, and they chose Trieste, which is literally as far away as you could possibly be from Cagliari. It's on the mainland, but it's just right over, it's practically in Slovenia, Trieste. Cagliari are an interesting example of what football will be like when they entirely get rid of fans in the stadium, because I mean, even now they've managed to get back into the Santa Lirian Gallery, but there's only because they're redoing much of it's been shut down because it's just not fit for purpose, and so you can only get I think 5,000 or something in there. Anyway, but they are playing at home, but with no fans in the stadium. When they were playing in Trieste, they had maybe 600 fans or something. So that's what he's been doing. In fact, there is the joke that the reason that he's in talks with Leeds is to get Cagliari to come and play there now. In many ways, as I say, he's not been regarded as an example of how to manage a club sensibly because of all these problems with shifting the fixtures around with no regard for the fans, and also the fact that he hasn't invested in the side. And other examples, for example, Marchetti, the goalkeeper who was part of Italy's World Cup squad and then managed to say in an interview that he was flattered by the interest from one or two big clubs. And Cellini was so outraged by this that he basically froze him out of the team for a whole season and then let him transfer. So he's not an easy guy. He's got a rock and roll band, and he likes to... When he had his Issa Arenas, which was this stadium in inverted commas that he constructed, he opened that stadium up with a concert.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, perhaps he'll be playing at Elland Road.
Interesting. Speaking of Leeds,
yes,
bands,
yep,
and bad ideas.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed that Yeovil have been putting together their own girl band.
It's a girl group band.
Right? Yeah. The name of which escapes me. But because of various delays and things in putting them together properly, they're going to be debuting at Yeovil's next home game, which is against Leeds.
Really? And when is that, John?
I think it's next week.
So at Yeovil Leeds next week?
At Huish Park next week.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong of these four or five young girls
right
performing in front of several thousand Yorkshiremen?
Remind me,
in
why?
In the middle of winter.
Why are Yeovil doing this?
It's a publicity stunt. And it's worked, because look, they're on the pod.
Right, okay. But there's no kind of financial, or is there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Their record sales will perhaps fund the club?
Who knows? Maybe they will, yeah. If they get to the, you know, if they reach the standards of girl groups such as Girls Aloud and the Spice Girls and All
Mix.
Saints.
Yeah.
Little Mix. Yeah, that was very current. That's far too current.
Yeah. Producer Ben's saying it should be called Goals Aloud. Not Girls Aloud, but Goals Aloud.
Very good.
That producer Ben, eh? Anyway, back to this Cellini business. He's always had a thing for English football, because he tried to buy West Ham a while ago, and I think there were some suggestions he might have been interested in Middlesbrough. Part of me would like to see Hamburg, because it would be so bizarre to see Massimo Cellini in the Championship.
Would it be a sort of similar setup to the one that's at Watford, with a lot of loan players coming from?
Well, I don't think so, because Udinese are an extremely well-organised club who have a network of scouts, and they have also Granada as part of their network around Europe, and there's a kind of synergy going on between all these clubs, and there's a structure in place. I'll move on from all of that, because there's other stories we should be talking about from the Football League, John. For example, Paul Ince, he's gone at Blackpool.
Yeah, booted out via text message, apparently.
Yeah.
Earlier on this week, Barry Ferguson, favourite to take over.
Is that so? And was the reason his attempts to sell his son to Monaco, or was it one win in 10 or something?
I think, yeah, it may well have been a combination of the two. I think the one win in 10 probably matters more for a team that are still desperate to get back into that playoff picture.
Right. It was 9 defeats in 10, says producer Ben. Okay. A stickler for factuality. Shaker Fox says, love the pod, but I guess Leicester are just going to have to do something more interesting than win 6 on the spin, including games against Derby, Reading and QPR, and lead the Championship by 5 points to get a mention.
Yeah, they probably will do.
What could they do? Maybe they could form a girl band.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah, one for the agenda at the King Power Stadium.
Mm. Foxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
just came to me.
Yeah.
Well, they have different entertainment there, don't they? Because they're... Thai owner, I think, has various Thai-themed halftime entertainment. Sometimes
what kind of thing?
Well, there's Muay Thai displays. There's
that's the boxing
Thai fashion shows. Yeah,
yeah,
and assorted other things. I mean, he did that in the early time after buying a club. I don't know if he still does it.
We've got a new halftime fun at Carra Road, which is people racing each other in inflatable rings.
Hey.
So you know, like that kind of those hamster balls that you can stand in. And you
oh yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So it's like that, but a ring. So it's a bit like it's a knockout at half time.
A ring.
Where is this?
Oh, like a wheel.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah. Okay. A wheel is a better way of describing it than a ring.
Where is this?
Norwich City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the club I always mention. Right. The disappointment of the Chelsea fans.
Right.
My favourite half time incident was always at Palace when they had a deal with Wicks and they'd put a shed without a roof in the centre circle. And you had to kick the ball at the shed, and the prize was the shed.
Without the roof. By your own roof.
Yeah, presumably.
Right. Zamalek in Egypt was surprised many by appointing Mido, as their new manager at the tender age of 30. He's gone on an offensive, saying, why don't people take me seriously just because I'm only 30? I don't think his age is the issue with most people being surprised about this appointment, Paul.
No, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on, because a few months ago when there was talk of him taking over as coach, he said he'd do so, but only on certain conditions.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the conditions was that nobody on the board is ever allowed to even mention the first team.
Really?
Yeah. He doesn't want interference.
How will they discuss?
Right.
To mention them,
yeah.
In private conversations around the dinner table.
Well, I don't know how strictly
that?
He was going to monitor
it. Above the board's houses.
Yeah.
Wouldn't put it past me, though, would you?
He's a fiery character. Anyway, now, in other manager news, we talked about Clarence Seedorf, who'd come in at Milan, and lots of smiles and stuff, and they got a win last weekend when they beat Verona, sort of, at home on Sunday night. The big thing when he came in that he said was, well, we're now going to target the Coppa Italia because Milan are, I think, 15 points off, maybe more, 17 points off the top three Champions League football, and their only real prospect... I did say that I didn't think they were going to get through against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. So their only real prospect of getting into Europe next season is the Coppa Italia. So they had their quarter-final against Udinese, and really not a great Udinese side, just last night at the San Siro, and took the lead. But then it all went very, very wrong. They ended up losing 2-1.
It went all a little bit Sassuolo.
It certainly did. Not quite as bad as that, but the team were whistled by their own fans. So the honeymoon is already over for Clarence Seedorf. Already over. And I think the really worrying thing, Seedorf brought in with no managerial experience at all until about 10 days ago. He was still a football player. The really worrying thing is the way that in both games, neither of which has seen Milan really perform terribly well, particularly, of course, this defeat to Udinese. He just sort of stood there and watched a little bit impassively, and every now and then would lean down to Mauro Tassotti and ask kind of vague and not particularly interested questions. Not sure what the content of those questions were.
Different coaches have different styles.
Well, that's true, but...
And the fact that V.S. Boas was hounded for so long for being on his haunches, and there's a whole, like, 500-word article about David Moyes' arms today in the Telegraph.
Is
like,
there? the subject... Like,
yeah, so what?
And what's the basis of that?
Well, his body language is right. Undermining the confidence in the squad.
Because he folds his arms a lot, is it?
Yeah, because he does this.
Oh, he does that?
Yeah, which works well on pod.
Seedorf doesn't do that. He just stands there looking like he's booked the... He's booked the stadium for after the game's finished, and when is this lot going to finish? I take your point about there being different stars, but when your team has one target left and it's to go forward in the Coppa Italia, and they're busy crashing out to a team that looks a lot more interested in the result than they are, you would want him perhaps to be communicating a little bit of urgency to the players. I don't know.
He maybe might also be letting them, you know, hoist themselves on their own petard or whatever. Give them enough rope.
I understand what you're saying. Well... They certainly have done. They're now out of that tournament. While Roma beat Juventus 1-0, small measure of revenge there for the Giallorossi after their recent defeat against the old lady. So they're through to the semi-final. Lazio-Napoli will be facing off next week. And today sees Fiorentina against Siena in the Tuscan derby quarterfinal. Another big European name crashing out of cup news. PSG got beaten by Montpellier. How about that? In the French Cup, of course. And Monaco went through, but... Bad news is that Falcao, who opened scoring, has picked up what looks like a very serious injury. Did you see this at all?
I haven't seen it, no.
Basically, it's I don't think the challenge is malicious, but it just happens to catch, the defender happens to catch his leg under his body as he goes down, and the ankle twists in a, well, I guess the whole bottom of the leg twists in a very bad way, and his knee is apparently well and truly wrecked. There's a lot of talk about cruciate ligaments and that, and Falcao not making it, indeed, potentially to the World Cup. We haven't got a diagnosis yet.
But that would
but
be
as
massive.
You mentioned, yeah, it would, although...
For the World Cup, I mean, he's, you know, the, yeah. Him and Colombia, the dark horses, he's the dark horse for the golden boot. That would be a...
Colombia do have the current top scorer in the Bundesliga, as Archie Rintut points out, Adrian Ramos, who's doing wonders for them and comes from Colombia as well. And Monaco certainly have a lot of other options. In fact, their recent winning spree came when Falcao was out of the side, but it is a big blow, and potentially with knock-on effects for Everton, as you mentioned earlier on, potentially for knock-on effects for Ranieri as well, because there's a lot of controversy now in France about why exactly Falcao was playing in a game against effectively an amateur side, Châtelet. Well then. Anyway, apparently we've got to shut up shop now, so that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back on Monday with a reaction to that rip-roaring fourth round of FA Cup action. But before that, on Friday, there'll be a little look at the papers. So perhaps you'll join me for that. In the meantime, many thanks, Paul Doyle.
Thank you.
Paul McInnes.
Thank you.
John Ashdown.
Thank you.
And producer Ben. Yep. And you, listener. And we'll speak to you on Monday. Have a super weekend.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required.